restaurant at our base, Friday 22nd of March, Rabbi Jeremy Golka. Purim, the postscript. This week's Torah Way has been sponsored, Leilo Nishmas, Esther Brocha, Basra of Aria, right. Purim, the postscript.
Okay, good morning. Good morning. Stage one. Okay, so I think it's very much the morning after, just walking around, looking around, seeing everyone's faces, and so we'll try and go easy a little bit. Keep you awake. Maybe the opposite. Okay, so you've got your coffee. I'll do what I can, and together we'll. It's actually a very beautiful idea I'd like to share. It's a Purim postscript. You know, if you would have asked various people on the streets in Shul yesterday, amidst the mayhem, does the Purim story have a happy ending? I would imagine, the guy riding the horse on Woodlands up and down Goldsman Road, and all the kids running around and the spielers, they'd say to you, well, of course it has a happy ending. Yeah, we're celebrating now, 2,500 years later, and we've done so every year since. Of course it has a happy ending. But, of course, it's not so simple. And I refer particularly to Esther Hamalka. Esther Hamalka, if you think about it, perhaps the most poignant pasuk in the whole Megillah is when she says, Kasher Vadati Ovadati. What does that mean? When she says, Mordechai, I'll listen to you, but you understand the stakes. If I go in to Achashverosh, it's all over. But we're married. Until now, I've been an onus. I couldn't help it. But now, I'm going in Baratzon willingly, and therefore, that's the end of our marriage. And that's what happens. She has to get divorced from Mordechai. She ends up living with Achashverosh. And whilst everyone else is singing, like Udim Hoysayir, Basimcha, etc., etc., Esther Hamalka spends the remaining years of her life in the palace of Achashverosh, married to this fellow. She has one child who is Jewish, but you can just picture the scene. She's standing there over the crib at night, away from her family, away from her community in the whole of Klal Yisrael, sitting in this palace, looking at this child, and whispering the Shema into his ear, and saying to him, listen, you're Jewish, lie by Yid. Yeah, remember, you're Jewish, and although you're going to grow up in a Persian palace, remember, you're Jewish. And unfortunately, it does not have a very happy ending, because although halachically, technically, he is Jewish, he grows up to be a Persian king. He marries non-Jewish women, Persian wives, and to all extent and purpose, he behaves like a non-Jewish person. So Esther Hamalka doesn't get the nachas, I'm sure, that she was hoping for. So it's actually not such a straightforward ending to the story. But, as ever, we'll see that there's a lot more going on, and we'll try and explore that in the short time that we have. And I think also it dovetails very beautifully into this week's Pasha Tzav, believe it or not. And we'll try and see how.
Took one for the team.
Thank you, Graham. You're right. Yeah. Okay, so let's take a look.
Could you not say that Vatikovati also means I'm being forced into this?
Yeah, we'll see. Let's go through the Makaris. So, paragraph 2, please, Rabbi Yisai. The Pasuk says in Megillah, in Perek Dalet, Vayomer Mordechai, and Mordechai says, Lahoshe v'lesta, Al tadomi benafsheich le'molet beis ha-melech mekol ha-yudim. Ki im hachareish tacharishi, a very powerful pasuk. If you remain silent, Esther, ba'is hazos, revach va'atzol le'yamer la'yehudim imokum hacher. If you don't stand up now, and if you remain silent, then revach and hatzola, the salvation will come from somewhere else. Va'atu beis ovich tevedu, and you will be not even a footnote in history. U'miyo deyem le'es kazos higad le'malchus. This is your big moment. What exactly was Mordechai saying to her? So, let's take a look. We'll back up a little bit. Last Shabbos was Parshas Zochar, perhaps the most beautiful pasuk in certainly the Haftarah and way beyond, is the pasuk of Netzach Yisrael Lo Yishaker from last week's Haftarah. What does that mean? Netzach Yisrael Lo Yishaker, when the eternity of Klal Yisrael is not a lie. You know, when people would ask the Klausenberger Rebbe in the war, in the concentration camps, in the Gehenna on this earth, they would go up to him and say, Rebbe, are we going to survive? And the Rebbe would say, it says in the pasuk Netzach Yisrael Lo Yishaker, Klal Yisrael will survive. Now, whether an individual, you or I, will be part of it, I don't know. But Klal Yisrael will survive. That's really what we say in last week's Haftarah. Now, that is what Mordechai says to Esther in this pasuk. Mordechai is saying to Esther, listen, Klal Yisrael is going to get through this. It looks dark, it looks like we're doomed, but we're going to get through this. How exactly, I don't know. And that's why he was walking, pacing up and down the whole time, trying to figure out how is this going to unfold. But either way, Klal Yisrael is going to get by. If you want to be the heroine, and you want to try and do what you can do, this is your moment. I understand a lot is at stake, but this is the pivotal moment in your life. That's what really he's saying to her. Now, there's a lot of backdrop. In the Haftarah of last week, in Parshas Zochar, which is the prelude, as it were, to Purim, you have a very strange episode. Shmuel comes to Shaul and says, you've got to destroy Amalek. And Shaul says, fine. I'm going to destroy Amalek. And he does that, with two exceptions. He keeps the king of Amalek, Agag, alive, and he doesn't destroy the sheep. And he has a cheshbon for that. He's going to do it tomorrow. He's not going to not do it. But rather, he wants to make a bigger Kiddush Hashem. I'll kill Agag tomorrow. We'll do a public ceremony where we destroy the last remnant of Amalek, and we'll offer up the korbanos, the sheep of Amalek as korbanos, and therefore that will be a bigger Kiddush Hashem. That was his cheshbon. And he says, Hakimoisi, yes, Tva Hashem, I've done what you said, Shmuel. Now again, we're talking about Shaul HaMelech. We're talking about someone of the stature who's we can't really fathom. But Chazal tell us that the pasuk says openly, Shmuel criticized him, and that was the downfall of his melucha. What was his mistake? His mistake was, although he had fantastic intentions, I'm going to make a bigger Kiddush Hashem, I'll destroy Agag, kill Agag in a public ceremony, but at the end of the day, that's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you. You've just got to do what Hashem says. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we serve him on his terms, not on our terms. That ultimately was the chait of Shaul HaMelech. Now, that has throwback to an earlier time, much earlier time. That has throwback to the chait of Adam HaRishon. How so? You have to bear with me with this. Amazing. This I heard from Ilan Halberstadt. Very interesting pshat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates Adam HaRishon. He says, I've got one job for you. You have got to make a Kiddush Hashem in this world. If you think about it, it's an important hashkafic concept. There's a concept of tzimtzum. What does that mean? The HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere. Molech Olaretz Kavoida, he's everywhere. We don't see him tangibly in this world. The teretz is, there's a concept of tzimtzum. Tzimtzum means, before Hashem created this world, he was metzamtzem himself, he restricted, confined himself away from this world, and almost, as it were, hid himself in this world, that we can't see him tangibly. That's why we walk the streets, we live like, that's how it is, we don't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was metzamtzem himself. In fact, the word olam, the world, comes from the word he'elam, ne'elam, something which is hidden. Your job, Adam HaRishon, is to make a Kiddush Hashem in this world. Every time you find me, every time you connect to me, that is a Kiddush Hashem, job done. End of story. Adam HaRishon says, I've got a better idea. I'll make an even bigger Kiddush Hashem. How so? One thing I mustn't do is eat from the Eitz Hadas. If I eat from the Eitz Hadas, I'll have heightened Bechira, and therefore every time I find HaKadosh Baruch Hu after I've eaten from the Eitz Hadas and I've had heightened Bechira, it will be an even bigger Kiddush Hashem. So I've got a great idea. You want me to make a Kiddush Hashem? By just doing what you say and connecting and finding me in this world, recognizing me in this world, I'll make an even bigger Kiddush Hashem. How so? I'll eat from the Yetz Hadas, I'll have heightened Bechira, there'll be a Yetz Hara, Yetz Hatov, pulling me in all the ways, and every time I find HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there'll be a bigger Kiddush Hashem. Again, great cheshbon, good calculation, but that's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked you to do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. So just don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. Now, Esther Hamalka, her job is to be mesaken, is to rectify the sins not only of Shaul, but of Adam HaRishon as well. And that theme appears throughout the Megillah, and we'll see it's going to feature in this week's parasha as well. You'll see. You see time and time again, Esther Hamalka is machnia herself. She submits and subjugates herself fully to Mordechai. Who is instructed, al pi ruach hakodesh, this is what you've got to act. I'll give you an example. She doesn't divulge her ancestry. Now, if you, we're familiar with the story, we heard it again 2 nights ago, yesterday, we're familiar with the story. But do you understand what that means? Do you understand the attempts, relentless attempts of Achashverosh to try and to get it out of her? Who are you? Where are you from? And she doesn't divulge anything. The Pasuk says, "Ein Esther Magedes Meiladeto Ve'es Amo Kasha Tziva Oleh Mordechai." Very clearly. Mordechai says, don't say, I don't say. Think about it. This took place, you know, we think the Purim story takes place over a total period of about 45 minutes. That's how long it takes to read, right? It doesn't. The Purim story takes place over at least 9 years. How long was she holding off not divulging her ancestry? About 5 years. 5 years. And he's chalashing to know. And it's not just the husband who's, you know, he's the leader of the world. He's the free, you know, the leader of the world as it was then. And he wants to know, and she's not saying. That takes a lot of backbone. More than that, she could have made a cheshva. She could have said, you know, when she catches him at a good moment, a wife has always got to know when to catch to ask the husband. I've got a friend in Eretz Yisrael told me, she says, I never ask for anything before supper. It's always after supper. You've got to find your time, right? Okay. So she could have found the right time and said to Achashverosh, you know, you wanted to know who I'm from? I'll tell you who I'm from. I am from that people that your friend Haman wants to destroy. Can you help me? She could have said that. It's so tempting for her to have said it when she finds the Shas HaKosher. Mordechai says, don't say, I don't say. One example of where she doesn't follow her own logic, she doesn't make her own cheshbonus, but she listens and she serves HaKadosh Baruch on his terms and on her own terms. Because ultimately, listening to Mordechai is submitting to the Ruach HaKodesh that HaKadosh Baruch was instructed at. Another example of that. Again, she goes into the king. She could have made a very good cheshbon. She had a huge amount at stake. She's brought up, her father died after she was conceived, her mother died after she was born. She's an almon, she's a yesoma, me'av u'me'ein, and according to the different pshatim what happened, but she's married to Mordechai, by her going in willingly, like I just said, kasher avadati avadati, that means now it's beratzon, it's not ba'onus, and she's saying goodbye to her marriage. And she has got a lot at stake here. And yet, she says, Mordechai, if that's what you want me to do, I'll do. But again, she could have made such a good cheshbon. She could have said, Mordechai, we're now Nisan. The 3 days of fasting, it's now, we're talking 11 months time. The decree is not till next Adar. He's going to call me in from, you know, at some point from now till then. Why should I go in willingly? As Mordechai says, just go. And again, she goes in voluntarily, end of marriage, but if that's what Mordechai says. So again, she submits herself, she doesn't make her own cheshbonus, but she listens to, she serves HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were, not on her terms, but on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's terms, on his terms. You see another example that, you know, she could have said, Mordechai, ready to fast 3 days now? The 3 days now was Yud Dalet, Tes Vav, and Tes Zayin Nisan. The 3 days where, you know, fasting, I know Erev Pesach is not always, plenty of food. Yeah, we get by bananas and crisps and whatever else. But Seder night, Dalet Kaisas, your matzah, your chiyuv to eat min ha-Torah. They didn't eat on those 3 days. They fasted over the first 2 days of Pesach. She could have said, you know, Mordechai, let's just wait a little bit. We've got 11 months to go. Again, you see time and time again that Mordechai, Al Pi Ruach HaKodesh, is instructing Esther, and she listens totally throughout. The point is that she is misaking the chait of Shaul HaMelech and the chait of Adam Rishon. Their two chatoim were, I serve HaKodesh Baruch Hu on my terms, not on his terms. because he wants me to destroy a monarch, I'll do it, but I'll do it better. I'll kill Agag tomorrow. I'll destroy the animals and we'll use them as korbanos. I'll eat from Yetz Hadas and I'll make a bigger Kiddush Hashem every time I connect. The chait was serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu on our terms, on his terms. There's a fellow, I don't know if he's ever spoken, he's come and spoken in the Torah way. When he's in town, you should get him. He's Eitan Feiner, about Eitan Feiner. Oh, you've heard him, he's been here? He's amazing, remarkable. So he spoke in school once, he's a tremendous Talmud. Anyway, he's a rabbi of a shul called the White Shul, I think it's called, in New York. And he's a phenomenal Talmud. He speaks at 300 miles an hour, and he quotes Mara Makomis without, he doesn't need any sheets. He's got it all up here. Anyway, Bekitsa, he tells him a remarkable story. He and his wife, unfortunately, for many years, didn't have children. And then, after many, many years of married life, they had a child who was very, very sick. For 8 months, this child was in hospital, and Eitan Feiner would go back with the force to hospital. His wife was there. It was a very difficult time. After 8 months, he made the bris. And at the bris, this was when he was still in Yerushalayim, he made the bris, and he's a well-known figure in the Torah world. And he invited a lot of people. I was not there, but I heard what he said. And he stood up, and he said a very powerful idea. He said, my greatest passion in life, said Rabbi Eitan Feiner, is to learn Torah and to teach Torah. To learn and to be marbit Torah. He says, for the last 8 months, I haven't been able to do that. Because I've been in and out of hospital, my son has been very sick, my wife, etc., etc. He said, but in the last 8 months, I've learned a lesson which is even more important than the Torah and the Harbotsis HaTorah that I'm involved in. And that is that I'm here in this world to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu on his terms, not on my terms. The last 8 months, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for whatever reason, didn't want me to learn as normal, didn't want to give Shiurim as I normally do. That, why? I don't know. But I'm here to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu on his terms, not on my terms. That's exactly the point. That is the challenge for Esther Malka. Now, that brings us to Parsha Saf. Any Bali Kura here? What is unique about Parsha Saf? Well, not unique. What is? There's a Shalsheles. Oh. How many Shalsheleshes? I don't know what the plural is of Shalsheles. Whatever. Four in the whole Torah. Now, here we go. What I'm going to share with you, I don't know if you've ever come across this. Now, I don't know where I've heard this. I've heard it from different things, but we'll develop it. I apologize if I don't. Can't quote you a source. But listen to this. There are four Shalsheles in the entire Torah. Three in Sefer Bereishis and one in tomorrow's Parsha. Now, there's a common denominator between all four. Okay, let's go through. Take a look, please, at paragraph 8. Yeah? Paragraph 8. The first pasuk is in Parsha's Vayera. Vayismamoha. Oh. Where's the Balkari who corrects it? Yeah? Etc. What is this referring to? This is referring to Lot. Lot is standing there. Sodom is about to be destroyed. The Malachim are saying, get out of here quick. And Lot, what is his issue? What is his underlying theme? Chemdas Hamon. He's a very greedy person. He's a very materialistic person. And he now has got to make a very difficult decision. It's either, you know, your money or your life. Do you ever hear the famous, I forget who it was, one of the famous old quip, where the guy stands up and puts a gun to his head and says, your money or your life? And he's thinking, and he goes, no, your money or your life? He goes, I'm thinking. Yeah, he's got to think about it. Lot, yeah, was thinking. He was thinking, and he's got, all of the Shalsheles in the Torah represents an inner turmoil, an inner emotional conflict. Yes, no, backwards and forwards. And more than that, there's two things. It represents an emotional inner turmoil and also a pivotal moment in the history of the Jewish people. I'll explain why. Like the inner turmoil on a personal level is very clear. Do I just get out of here? Or do I stay here? All my money is going to go. So you can feel the conflict. That's number one. Number two is Chayesorah. Vayoyme Hashem, Elokei Adoni Avram, etc., etc. Eliezer Eved Avraham is charged to go find the wife for Yitzchak. Now, again, there's personal inner turmoil. Why? Because Eliezer wanted desperately that his own daughter marry Yitzchak. says, if he goes, does the mission, do I serve my master loyally and do what he says? Or do I try and manipulate it a little bit that he'll end up marrying my daughter? So there's an inner turmoil. The next one is Hashas Vayeshev, with Yosef. Yosef is being seduced by Ashes Potiphar, and the Pasuk says, he's got an inner turmoil. Do I succumb? Do I remain loyal to my faith, to my family, etc., etc.? There's inner turmoil. Now, what about this week's parasha? This week's parasha is Vayishchol Vayikach Moshe. What is this week's parasha? Parasha itself is the Chanukah of HaMishkan. This is the inauguration of the Mishkan. Where's the inner turmoil for Moshe? Let me tell you. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Pasuk says, should have been the Kohen Gadol.
Yes.
Right? When he resisted taking the mantle of the Jewish people and saving, doing the Hatzolah work, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for 7 days, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was negotiating with Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu resisted. And he was punished. Yeah, the Pasuk says, Charenaf, says Rashi on the Pasuk there, where's the Charenaf? I don't see a Roshim, I don't see any anger. Says Rashi over there, there is a Roshim. Why? Hale'ar and Achicha, etc., etc. But yeah. He's going to be the Kohen Gadol now, and you've lost it. But when was the one time that Moshe Rabbeinu served in the Mishkan? The answer is this. By the way, he served for 7 days. Yeah, well, what's that all about? Rabbi Bernstein once said, an amazing pshat. How do you punish a person? Yeah, as a teacher in a school, Baruch Hashem, as a menahel in a school, I never come across this. I have to speak to other schools what they do. But Baruch Hashem, all our students are wonderful and perfect. But here in other schools, they have problems. So I asked them, what do you do to punish? So there's a concept of the punishment's got to fit the crime. Midah keneged midah. Says Rabbi Bernstein, that's exactly what's going on over here. You can't just punish Moshe Rabbeinu and say, okay, you've lost it. You know, you tell a kid in year 10, yeah, in old, 15 years old, and you behave so badly, you're never going to be head boy. So he'll shrug his shoulders and say, say that. Okay. But if you get the kid to wear the badge saying head boy, and you put him on the stage, and you tell his parents, and he tells the whole world, and then now after 3 days you say, I'm afraid you can't be head boy anymore, that's much more, he feels it. Moshe Rabbeinu serves in the Mishkan for 7 days, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, thank you very much. So if the 7 days is Keneged, the 7 days where he negotiated and said, no, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? That's the punishment's got to fit the crime. Now, he then, for the last time, offers up a korban. And that is the inner turmoil. Wow, can you imagine the tension Moshe Rabbeinu is feeling? I could have been the Kohen Gadol. That emotional conflict within him, this is it, the last korban I'm now offering. That inner turmoil that Moshe Rabbeinu is feeling is a very personal thing. I blew it, and now I can't be the Kohen Gadol. I'm going to be the Levi, and I'm going to be the progenitor of all Levi'im, but I've lost it. Okay, so you have inner turmoil. Now, that's on a personal level. But on all four of the Shalshelis that appears in the Torah, it's also a pivotal moment in the history of the Jewish people. How so? Think about it. The first Shalshelis is with Lot. Lot, this again is a pivotal moment. Because if Lot stays behind, he will be a pillar of salt like his wife there down by the Dead Sea. That's it. But he didn't. And he ran away. He then runs to a cave with his two daughters. He thinks the whole world's destroyed. He's got to rebuild the world. He fathers two children. One is Amun, and one is Moav. Moav, of course, is Rus. Rus is David HaMelech. Melech Moshiach, Malchus Beis David. So there was a lot at stake publicly, nationally. What about the next one? Well, also, Eliezer has got to go find the wife. Yes, there's personal conflict and inner turmoil, but nationally this is a pivotal moment.
Yeah.
Finding the future aim of Klal Yisrael, that's quite a task. He's got to find someone who is going to be the future leader of the mother of the Jewish people. He found Rivka Imenu. The third one, of Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik, again, this is a very pivotal moment, not just personally, but nationally. Because if he blows it now, then he's not going to be one of the Shvatim, he's not going to be one of the Shiftei Kar, no Menashe and Ephraim, Mitosa is not going to be Shlema. We'll have to go now, we'll have to do something different, we'll have to take a different course. So again, nationally, there's a major junction, if you like, in Jewish history. And the final one, in this week's Parsha, Parsha Tzav, you also have a sort of a possible sort of pathway. Why? Because now this is the beginning of Kohanim as we know it, and beginning of Leviim. There's two roads. You've got Aaron HaKohen, who's now going to be the father of all future Kohanim, and you've got Moshe Rabbeinu, who's now going to be the father of all future Leviim. So therefore, you've got two paths. This is a very important point in Jewish history. So what you see, just to sort of connect the two, is that people in their lives, they encounter situations which are pivotal, which are critical moments in their own lives. Do they to make the right decisions? We saw it yesterday, and Mordechai says it so clearly to her. If you keep quiet at this moment in time and you don't go into the melech, then the respite and the salvation will come from somewhere else. No one's going to remember you. This is your big moment, personally and nationally. And again, don't think that nationally that's it for Klal Yisrael. No, Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker. Klal Yisrael are going to keep going. Eitz Chaim in the Machazikim, when a leaf falls off a tree, it will wither and die. If we hold on to the tree to the extent that we attach ourselves to the tree, we will have eternity. That's the point. And therefore, you see that Esther Malka does stand up, and a tremendous personal sacrifice. Like I said at the beginning, the story, the postscript of the Purim story is not such a happy one for Esther. For us, yes. But for Esther Malka on a personal level, her final years are tragic, really. She's living with Ahasuerus, with a child who is halachically Jewish, but that's all. And it's a very sad postscript of the story. But ultimately, that's what her tafkid was. Why? That's what Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted her to go through. That was her tafkid, that was her mission. And she chose the right thing. And the connection, of course, to this week's parasha is the four shalshelis. That each shalshelis in the Torah represents a situation where there was a pivotal moment, not just individually, personally, for that person in question, but also nationally. And I think it's a very powerful idea that we have to sometimes, when we're facing an Nisayon, just imagine, this could be it. This could be a pivotal moment in a person's life, and who knows what the consequences are for Klal Yisrael.
Yeah.
So it's a very powerful, very beautiful idea, a very interesting postscript to the Purim story. I thank you again for inviting me, and Mr. Shemin, look forward to future occasions.
What was the kiddush?